Welcome to the Leadership Journey podcast. My name is Alan Wilson and I'm the host of the podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to various Christian leaders, discussing some of the things that have contributed to the story of their leadership, and at the same time encouraging you to reflect on your own leadership journey. You can subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, look for the Leadership Journey podcast, or we've just recently been listed on Castbox if you want an alternative podcast player. This week the podcast has an international flavour as my guest is Clive Atkinson. Clive is originally from Northern Ireland, but he's been working for the past 17 years as chaplain in All Saints Anglican Church in Vevey on the shore of Lake Geneva. In part one of our conversation, Clive talks about some of the early spiritual influences in his life and the value of mentoring in Christian leadership. He also talks about how he's been influenced by the work of the London Institute for Contemporary Christianity and how his church in Vevey has caught the importance of sending people out to their everyday jobs. You may notice one or two technical issues in the first part of the interview, but stay tuned. We eventually got it sorted. Enjoy the podcast. Clive, welcome to the Leadership Journey podcast across the miles.
It's great to be here, Alan.
I know, actually, you have developed a bit of a little bit of a pattern of listening to the podcast as part of your weekly routine or something, is it?
It's been brilliant, actually.
Well, that's good. Keep talking it up. Keep talking it up.
No, it's been really, really good. Really enjoyed the variety of speakers that or interviews that you've had on. Just really benefit from great wisdom sort of forged over the years. So yeah, no, really enjoying it and hoping to continue to enjoy it.
Yeah, I hope you enjoy listening to these couple that we're going to be doing as well. So Clive, you are is your official title the chaplain or the pastor of All Saints Anglican Church in Vevey?
I suppose technically speaking, yeah, my title is chaplain. But I get called lots of things, not always pleasant, but generally, chaplain.
Okay. And All Saints in Vevey is an international church. So your ministry is in English, and you're working essentially with the English-speaking community in that area.
Yes, we are. I'm part of the Church of England's diocese in Europe. The church is also partners with an Anglican mission agency called Intercontinental Church Society. And, I mean, they planted All Saints, it's nearly 120 years ago. And we are home to a whole variety of denominations and a whole variety of nationalities. And so, yeah, although we're Anglican at our roots, we are very much an international community.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that, I mean, just describe Vevey for those who are not familiar with it. Just help to locate that.
So think of Lake Geneva, Lac Limont. Geneva one end, Vevey's more or less at the other. Mountains on both sides. Vevey's about 80,000 strong. World headquarters of Nestle, and so that pulls in quite a number of international expats, the majority of whom are English speaking. Beautiful part of the world, it has to be said.
Yeah, I know that I have, having visited you there and then come back to Northern Ireland, people, I mean, obviously you're from Northern Ireland, we'll hear more about your background, but bumping into people here who would say to me, oh, Clive Atkinson, is there any word of him coming back to Northern Ireland? And I'm sort of thinking, if you could stand in Clive Atkinson's living room and look out the window across his garden, you wouldn't be asking that question.
Yeah, I know. There is a latent sense of guilt that comes with living where we live. I probably have one of the nicest views around here. It's quite breathtaking.
Yeah, that's certainly from out, looking out from your living room is, because you used to have a big tree, I think, and then that came down a few years ago, isn't that right?
Yeah, we had a neighbour who moved in beside us and they effectively bulldozed their house, rebuilt and asked us to take some trees down, and which is great because we almost now have a, it's almost like a 270-degree view looking up the valley and then down towards Geneva.
Yeah, yeah.
And a mountain on the other side that sort of heads up about 2,000 metres. So, yeah,
I tell you what we should do is, at some point, I know it'll be getting dark where you are right now, but maybe tomorrow you could take a photograph from your look that of that view and send it to me, and we'll stick it up on the blog. And then anybody who wants to just get a little bit of a sense of where you're speaking from would be able to see that. You've been there for over 15 years now, Clive, yeah?
Yeah, so 15th of October this month was our 16th birthday. We're into our 17th year now, which is just incredible to think that we've been here that long.
Yeah, so tell us, we've said it that you're originally from Northern Ireland. You and I have a number of things in common. I mean, not least that we both have you. You're still working, in, as I did, in an international church, also along Lake Geneva, about 45 minutes away. But we went to the same school. Although I have to add that we went at sort of different decades. But we're both. But we're both Lisburn men originally. Yeah. Lisburn and County Antrim, and both former pupils of Wallace High School.
Yeah, that's right. I certainly was born in Lisburn, 1968. My family, though, were Derry people, and not long after I was born, we returned to Londonderry as a family, where we were up until 75, 76, when my father moved back down to Lisburn to take up a job in Belfast. I spent the majority of my childhood and teenage years in Lisburn, but my early years were spent in Derry.
Okay, right. What about church stuff growing up? Did you grow up in a church family, or what were the sort of Christian influences around you early on?
So Mum and Dad were two very faithful churchgoers. We grew up within the Church of Ireland, both in Derry and in Lisburn. My dad, I would have described him as a prayer book Anglican. He was a traditional Anglican with a very deep faith. Some of my childhood memories are actually walking in on my dad in his bedroom, kneeling by his bed with his Bible open, praying. Those sorts of memories impacted me, that this was something for my dad, which was much, much more beyond going through the hoops, that this was a personal faith for him. So we would have been in church every Sunday morning, without fail, and whether that was in Derry or in Lisburn. I guess for me, I got to a point as a 15-year-old where I was beginning to move away from church, and that was actually, it became, I wouldn't have described it as a crisis point, but it certainly became a line in the sand for me, because I was on my way out of church, and yet at the same time God began to make himself known to me. I look back on that sort of as a 15-year-old on what was a very special moment for me. As a Wallace High School student, I had been given a Gideon Bible in my first year, and probably like most people, stuck it in the drawer and ignored it.
Yeah, little reddy coloured New Testament with a little lamp on the front cover. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Exactly, and meant nothing to me. And then, as a 15-year-old guy who was playing hockey just like yourself, yeah, and exploring all the sort of things that were going on after the hockey game, and doing what 15-year-olds were doing at that stage of life, I suddenly began to want to read the Bible. It was a desire that began to grow in me. And as I opened the Bible, my little Gideon Bible, and began to read it from Matthew 1, not really understanding a lot of what I was reading, but it gripped me. And the more I read, the more I wanted to read. And that went from reading the Bible to trying to pray. And not having ever really prayed personally, I was really struggling to what to pray and how to pray. And so I did what I knew, and that was I opened a 1662 Anglican prayer book and began to recite the prayers from the prayer book. And that was like a springboard where I guess I discovered my own prayer vocabulary. And I guess I began to relate to God in the way that the only way that I could, and the only way that I understood at that point. And then I was sitting in the library, this was in my lower sixth year at Wallace, and a guy called Robin Bassett, who had moved into school that year. He and I were sitting together, and he turned around to me and he said, Clive, are you a Christian? And in that moment, as if time stood still, and I thought, what do I say? And the sort of the previous sort of 6 to 8 months just flashed before me, and I turned around to him and said, Robin, yes, I am. And that for me was a springboard. It was a public confession of something that God had been doing in me for 6 to 8 months. And he was the first person that I turned to and said, yes, I am a Christian. He took me to the Scripture Union, and the rest is history.
So that's quite a direct question that guy asked you then. Was there a context? Did you know him, or did he just do that out of the blue?
No, I didn't know him. To be honest with you, my memory is very vague as to how we ended up sitting in the library together. But he was I subsequently found out he was a very strong Christian who was very active in sharing his faith. And so I think for him it was quite a natural question to ask.
Yeah.
But it was an opportunity to publicly confess what had been going on inside me for 6 to 8 months.
Yeah, there's a real sense it wasn't that you went looking for God, but it was a sense that God was working to bring you to himself, yeah?
Without any shadow of a doubt, whenever I think about how people come to faith, I guess I love this word regeneration, this whole idea that actually it's God doing a work in me that wakens me up or raises me spiritually from the dead. That allows me to get to know him with this gift of salvation, this being born again. Mm-hmm. I relate to this whole idea of being spiritually dead and then being spiritually raised. That was my personal experience.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. So that was your lower sixth year. University follow afterwards?
Yes, I scraped by the skin of my teeth into Queen's University, where I was to study chemistry for 4 years. And Queen's was that was such a formative time for me. I look back on those 4 years and thank God for the Christian Union there, which I got involved with from day one, both joining a department small group in the David Keir building where we were studying chemistry, and then on Thursday evenings in the students' union upstairs with a huge number of other Christian students. I mean, upward Queen's at times there were at least 500, at times even heading towards 1,000 students meeting in the students' union at that time. Mm-hmm. It was a wonderful experience.
Yeah. Were you beginning at that stage? Were there any indicators of leadership that would eventually come to fruition in, you know, further along the road? Were you involved in committees or anything like that at the Christian Union?
I shared the leadership of our department small group, I ended up being the president of the Christian Union at Queen's in my third year. Uh-huh. And so that was, that was both of those experiences some of my first experiences of Christian leadership, and particularly being president of the Christian Union of Queens. That was being thrown in the deep end. Wonderfully formative, very, very challenging. It wasn't something I necessarily went looking for.
Can I ask you about that? Because what I wanted to ask you was, and it may be hard to answer, do you think that your peers who appointed you to that office saw something in particular in you, and that was why they called you into that office? And do you know what that would have been, what they would have seen in you?
Yeah, I would probably struggle to remember the exact process. I can say that they were seeing something in me that I wasn't necessarily seeing. I guess for me personally, being involved with things and And leading things was something that I had experienced at Christian Youth, or the SU at school, youth fellowship and Sunday night youth fellowship at the church that I was attending. I was intending to get involved with committees, but certainly they were seeing things in me that I wasn't necessarily seeing. But it didn't seem, this may sound odd, but it didn't seem unnatural to be in those positions. It felt relatively comfortable.
Yeah.
Even though not all of the experience was a comfortable experience.
Well, quite. And I think, you know, a number of people will talk about their, you know, in their terms of the leadership journey, they'll use the same expression that you've used about being thrown in at the deep end. Were you alone at the deep end, or was there anybody helping you to swim? Were there mentors around you?
I mean, certainly I was part of a large committee that were running the Christian Union at that time, and there were some absolutely fantastic people who were on that team as well. UCCF had travellers, what they called student travellers at that time, which would go around the various universities in Northern Ireland and support Christian Union leaders. And there was a guy called Dave Healy, who was a mentor of mine at that time. And Dave was a wonderful support, getting alongside you, very understanding, helped you work through the sort of leadership challenges that you were facing then. And also personal development as well. It was a recognition that you just simply weren't running an organization, but that you were seeking to develop in your own leadership. And Dave was brilliant at that.
Mm-hmm. Were there other mentors around you, say in church, or, you know, any other parts of your life? Were there others who were providing the same kind of inputs, or was it mainly Dave?
And well, whenever, probably as I was in the year that I became president of the Christian Union, I discovered the Church of Ireland Centre at Queen's University, which is the Anglican chaplaincy there. Harold Miller, Bishop, who's now Bishop Harold Miller, Bishop of Down and Dromore. Yeah. Harold was chaplain. He was leading the Church of the Resurrection. And Harold became a mentor for me in that year when I was at university, or in my third year at university. He would then leave the chaplaincy and head south.
Yeah, by the way, some people will probably remember that Harold featured a number of months ago on the podcast here. He's already been on, so that will be a name that will ring some bells. So he became a mentor. And what were some of the specific ways that he fed into your life?
Well, on a number of different levels. He gathered young men and women together who he saw potential leadership, and I do remember sitting in his front room and spending time with Harold. Harold was never behind the door when it came to speaking into your life. And I do remember one particular moment when Harold, as he was literally leaving the chaplaincy to get into the car to move to Cork, looked at me and said, "You will one day be ordained and a minister in the Church of Ireland." And I laughed at him. So he wasn't afraid to speak into people's lives. He also gave people leadership responsibilities within worship on Sunday mornings and Sunday evenings. And I would say the congregation at the Church of the Resurrection itself was a mentoring congregation who was encouraging towards the students that attended there, very inclusive in terms of church life. And I just do remember that as a very formative time.
Yeah, yeah. Were there things about Harold? Would you ever have looked at Harold and said, you know, if ever I do become a leader, if I enter into church ministry, I'd like to do some of the things that Harold does? Was there anything about him? Is there anything about him in that sense? It could be the opposite. It could be the opposite, mind you. It could be. You could say, if ever I get into that position, I'll certainly not do that the way Harold does it.
I mean, Harold became and has been for me a mentor for most of my ministry. I mean, I wouldn't hesitate to call Harold a spiritual parent for me. I have a vivid memory of going to the Church of the Resurrection for the very, very first time. Up until that point, from the point of becoming a Christian, I was exposed to the whole gambit of Christian denominations that I had no experience of up until that point. And a lot of my Christian friends at school and at university were either Baptists or Brethren or Presbyterians, and so actually I was experiencing something outside of the Church of Ireland. And if I was being honest, if I hadn't found the Church of Ireland, I probably would have left the Anglican Church and begun to attend another denomination. But I walked into the Church of the Resurrection that Sunday morning. And as the church service started, I'm not exaggerating, I began to weep. And I think this was something that the Lord was doing in me at that time. But at that moment, I knew that I knew that I knew that this was my spiritual home, that I was called to be part of the Anglican Church. All of this was happening in sort of seconds as I was worshiping in that church. I had a sense that I was going to be called into this.
Yeah.
Although I would then go on to resist it quite heavily. Yeah. But it was a sense that actually that the Lord had a place for the Church of Ireland in the mission and shaping of the island of Ireland, and that I was going to be part of that.
Yeah. Well, this thing of having that early sense of call when you walked in there, and then your response to Harold when he said, you know, one day you're going to be ordained, you're going to be in the Church of Ireland, and to laugh at him, and then you've used the word resistance, the idea of resistance, you would resist it. Tell us a little bit then about that next stage of, here's Harold making this pronouncement about you, no pressure, and the journey eventually to pursuing training then for ministry.
Yeah. I probably resisted it because I was resisting a model of leadership that made me very uncomfortable. It was quite traditional, and a model of church that I wasn't very comfortable with. Harold modelled a ministry at the Church of the Resurrection that demonstrated to me that there was something different, that this could be done differently, that actually the life within the Anglican Church could be done differently. That there could be life and vibrancy, that there could be mission and outreach and discipleship, all within a context of a traditional church. And so I on the one hand I was seeing that, and yet on the other hand I was terrified of becoming what I didn't want to become. Life's complicated. At the same time I was studying chemistry, I was really enjoying that. I had had conversations with the chemical engineering department about doing a PhD, and that did my ego no world of good. And so all of that was all in the mix. Becoming a Church of Ireland rector just didn't do it for me at that time.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Well, how was that resistance overcome?
It was again a bit like my conversion. It was quite dramatic. It was the Christmas of my final year, and this battle within me was just increasing and increasing and increasing. And I had several conversations with the new chaplain, Stephen Ford, who's the current dean of Belfast Cathedral, and I had several conversations with Stephen. And I'd gone away that Christmas to sort this out once and for all, and I read a book called No Compromise. It was the biography of Keith Green. And the more I read that, the more I became convinced that I could no longer say no to what the Lord was calling me to. And at the end of that book, there's a prayer of no compromise, and I prayed it. And for me, that was the moment where I gave in. And the first thing that I did in the new year was to contact Stephen, and through Stephen, contact the Bishop of Connor, and begin the process of moving towards ordination.
And was that, did you then go straight into training immediately after your chemistry degree?
Yeah, so the chemistry degree, I completed that the June of that year. That was 1990. And then straight to Dublin in that September.
And when you went to Dublin, we'll fill that in for folk who may not realise, the Church of Ireland Training Institute, when you went down there, was it still with a sense of, I'm a reluctant recruit, or was there a more of a sense of, this is what I'm called for, and I'm really looking forward to getting my teeth into this?
Yeah, it was very much the latter. Once I said yes, I mean, that was it. And I knew that this was what I was called to. And so went to Dublin with a sense of excitement, with a real desire to prepare and get ready and to get into ordained ministry.
Yeah. Can I just go back to the piece of the story about Harold for a moment, and this idea of mentoring. You described him as a spiritual parent to you. Was that something that you sought out in him as much as he offered it to you, or was it much more he was offering you this because he saw the potential in you?
I think more the latter.
Yeah.
I think Harold saw something and wasn't afraid to call it out, and wasn't afraid to encourage and try to fan that flame.
Yeah.
And I look back on it now, and he was mentoring me. I'm not quite sure I would have recognized it.
Sure.
For me at that point, I probably would have thought he was just being a really great pastor, and speaking into not just my life, but other people's lives. And you know, encouraging us to think seriously about whole life discipleship, whether that was within an ordained context, or whether that was as a teacher, or as a civil servant, or as a doctor, whatever that was. So it was. I didn't recognize it as mentoring, but I think that's exactly what Harold was doing.
Yeah. Well, would you say from the perspective of your own experience and your own observations about ministry over quite a number of years now, would you say that that's something a lot of people are doing, or is it still a bit of a glaring need?
Oh, that's a great question. I think there is a lot of informal mentoring going on that may not necessarily have the label of mentoring.
Yeah.
But it's older, more experienced Christians coming alongside people and befriending them and loving them and encouraging them and walking with them. I do believe the whole area of mentoring towards leadership, whatever form that leadership will take, has become a lot more intentional.
Yeah.
There is the mentoring course that CPAS now provide, and I'm sure there are other courses out there. But certainly in my experience, it was informal, but effective.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to an older leader? I mean, now that you're 50, Clive, you know, what advice would you give to an older leader who maybe becomes aware of a sense of responsibility to be involved in that kind of work?
Yeah. Certainly one of the things that Harold did was he created space for people to explore ordained leadership. And it was a non-threatening space where people could ask questions, people could dip in or dip out, and I think that is really, really helpful. And And that, creating space like that or having conversations around Christian leadership, I believe actually raises up Christian leadership in people's perspective. It prioritizes it. And I think it sows a vision to a church community that this is important and that this is something that we need to be doing. And so creating space, talking about it, inviting people to come alongside you and to walk with you, giving people experience in leadership, taking a risk with people, all of those things are essential for raising up leaders.
Yeah.
So those sorts of things I would encourage with anyone.
Yeah, and I think you said a moment or two ago that it wasn't just that he was encouraging people to become ordained ministers or, you know, to see their leadership purely in terms of being in the church. But I think you talked about maybe people are going into teaching or some other professions. That's got to be an important part of it as well, isn't it? Mentoring people to see how their faith works and grows in those contexts as well.
I couldn't agree more. I think one of the things that I have really benefited from in the last 2 to 3 years has been some of the work of the London Institute of Contemporary Christianity, LICC, who you know, are pushing this whole idea of whole life discipleship. And I mean, certainly one of the things that we see here at All Saints in Vevey, a large majority of our congregation are working within the corporate world. Many are within the medical world, many within the teaching world. And having a vision of a local church that sees itself as existing to equip people where God has them and helping them to give a lead where that is, whether that's in Nestle, whether that's in an international school, or whether that's in the local hospitals, that they actually are asking themselves a question. What does it mean? What does it mean for me to be a Christian here? And what does Christian leadership look like in my context? And one of the things that LICC have really pushed, and I agree with them, is that if we are really to seek to shape our communities, then it's got to be in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And having a vision of a local church that isn't about what can the members do for the local church, but what can the church do in order to help its members where they are working.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, that's an important shift in emphasis that LICC have really helped me to see.
Yeah, can you help to just sort of work this out a little bit? I mean, help us to think this through. What does that look like then in terms of the life of All Saints? Are there things that you can share with us that are ways that you're helping people to do what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I need to say that all of this comes from the work of LICC, and so I cannot take can't take any credit for this at all.
Well, you can take credit for it in that you've seen the importance of it and you're doing something about it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we would regularly have the habit of, because we're an international church, people leave regularly, and so we would intentionally send people out, get them up the front, interview them, pray for them. But one of the things that we're trying to develop is if people change jobs, that we actually send them out into that new job. We've a couple of people who have recently been unemployed for quite a while and have recently found jobs. And the intention is to get them up to the front of the church. Let's find out what you're going to be doing next. Let's send you, let's commission you into those places.
Yeah.
We have a thing, we regularly each Sunday pray into what LICC labeled TTT, This Time Tomorrow. And we, in our congregational intercessions, we regularly go through the various workplaces where people are and just pray for them. In our preaching as well, wanting to preach in such a way that applies the scripture to the workplace. So those sorts of ideas, and trying to make that a habit and trying to make that part of the culture of the church.
Mm-hmm. That's really helpful. And I think for folk who are listening, it's those are helpful takeaways that they can have. And interestingly, as you know, in this podcast series, we've just recently had a couple of episodes of the podcast, we've been talking with Nigel Hamilton, former head of the civil service here in Northern Ireland. And there, you know, we did talk a bit about what it means to live out the values of your Christian faith in the workplace. So you're following that up. Clive, we're out of time for this week's podcast, so we're going to leave it there. We still need to hear how you got from training to that part of the world in which you find yourself today in Vevey, on the shores of Lake Geneva. And we want to hear a little bit more about what ministry has looked like in the context of International Church over these past number of years. So thank you for what you've shared already with us. And we look forward to talking again next time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to Clive for being with us on the podcast, and thank you too for listening. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Castbox, and remember that you can post a review. Clive will be back next week to tell us about the ministry journey that's taken him to Switzerland, and he shares the advice that he would give to a young version of himself embarking on that journey. Come back for more of this story, and in the meantime, have a good week.